In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies. It is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than they're worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, a revealing look at demons, devils, fallen angels, and the darker side of human nature.
People manifest symptoms and behaviors that could look like demonic possession on their own. I've actually seen it happen in a physical therapy unit where there were children who had some mental issues and it looked like they were possessed. Now, I'm not going to say that this doesn't exist, but are these priests and are these demonologists viewing what they're dealing with through a distorted lens based upon their own beliefs?
This podcast is sponsored by International Star. Choosing a gift for someone special can be a daunting task. Whether it's a birthday, Mother's Day, Father's Day, anniversary, or any other big day, you want a gift that's unique and perfect for that person who already has everything. International Star Registry can help. They've been providing unique gift ideas for over 25 years. International Star Registry lets you name an actual star in the sky after your special someone. Name a star after someone you care about, and they'll remember it forever and never forget your thoughtfulness. The address is getarealstar.com. Getarealstar.com to give someone the gift of a real star in the sky. That address again, getarealstar.com.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs, here's Richard Serrett.
I just wanted to give you an update on the raccoons in the attic situation. That scratching noise that kept me up for two consecutive nights has now stopped, which means one of three things. Number one, there isn't a raccoon in the attic. Perhaps it was just on the roof trying to get in for two straight nights. It couldn't get in and gave up and then moved on. Number two, I imagined the whole thing, some sort of auditory hallucination that comes with too little sleep and perhaps old age. And three, this one really concerns me. There is an expectant female raccoon in the attic above my head, and all has quieted down because she's getting ready to have her litter. Quite frankly, I'm hoping it's the auditory hallucination. I suppose I can't entirely discount a fourth option, demonic activity. Why not? I do, for the record, believe in an unseen world. I believe in angels, both kinds, the good and the fallen variety. And as a Bible-believing Christian, I believe in the existence of demons. In fact, I was talking about demonic possession with a psychiatrist on Coast to Coast a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Richard Gallagher, and he insists he's identified a number of authentic cases of demonic possession. And of course, earlier this week, Ryan Peterson was on the pod talking about the Nephilim and their fathers, the fallen angels. Geez, I hope by talking about this subject, I haven't opened myself up to some kind of demonic oppression or infestation. If there are demons in the attic, I hope they'll busy themselves with all the back issues of National Geographic we store up there, and they'll leave my eternal soul the hell alone. Ah, what the heck? Why stop now? Let's get into this some more, shall we? The devil goes by many names. And his tribe is legion. Throughout human history, we've been obsessed with the dark opposites of God and angels, light and mercy. Whether it's our religions and sacred texts, folklore and myths of old, legends, fairy tales, novels, or the movies and television shows of today, the dark entities enthrall us, terrify us, and remind us of the dualities of life. But where did they originate, and are they real? Does every religion or region of the world include them? Well, that's what we're going to discuss over the next 40 minutes or so. Marie D. Jones is a best-selling author of nonfiction and fiction and a screenwriter-producer with her own company, Where's Lucy Productions. She's appeared on television and on radio all over the world and has hundreds of credits writing for magazines, guest blogs, reviews, short stories, online articles, gift books. She's lectured widely on the paranormal, unknown anomalies, cutting-edge science, metaphysics, and human consciousness. Her latest book, co-authored by Larry Flaxman, is Demons, the Devil, and Fallen Angels. Hey, Marie, welcome to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
All right. Congratulations on the new book in which you co-author with Larry Flaxman. You two have collaborated on a lot of books. What is it now? At least the two of you, what, 15?
Oh, no.
No?
For me, it's getting close to that, but I think this is our ninth book, and we're planning on doing another one, so that'll be number 10.
Excellent.
But yeah, it just seems like they're all, you know, there's 15 of them.
Well, you are so prolific, and I always look forward to the next one and the next one and the next one. And now we have Demons, the Devil, and Fallen Angels. And this topic, I mean, there's such a proliferation on television and in films and in literature. So much of it now, I mean, just look at the weekly TV lineup. It's just chock-a-block with shows about demons and the occult and the paranormal, which is, you know, sort of caused a bit of a backlash, I suppose, from religious people. And so I'm just wondering, do you think we're in a bit of a satanic panic?
You know, I think it kind of goes in cycles, because if you recall, you know, years ago when movies like The Exorcist came out and The Omen and Entity, and there were a number of really, really creepy horror movies that focused on demons or Satan or the devil or the Antichrist, what, you know, whatever. And then it kind of disappeared for a while, and we went through our ghost period, you know, and then we might go through a UFO period where movies and TV shows are focusing on UFOs. Now it seems like demons have come back into favor. And Larry and I also noticed that even within the paranormal community, where maybe 5 years ago, everything was a ghost. You know, everything. Didn't even matter what it was. It was a ghost. Well, now you've got paranormal researchers and investigators blaming everything on the devil. They're all demons. Everybody's a demonologist. You know, it's become kind of a popular field of study. So I think it goes in cycles. And I think also when society is falling apart a little bit, we tend to pay more attention and give more energy to the dark side. But, you know, in my opinion, I hear people say things like, well, Satan is alive and running around in the streets and he's controlling people and controlling our politicians. And to me, that's a cop-out. I think that's an excuse for the darker side of human behavior. And that's one of the things that we definitely wanted to explore is there a link between the dark side of our own behavior, our own shadow image, and this sort of fascination that we have for demons and the devil.
So there are those who believe in certainly the spirit of Satan. In other words, people that behave in a satanic manner, and that it would be sort of giving in to the darkest nature of the human condition. And then there are those who actually believe in an entity, Satan. Do you come down one way or the other on that?
With this book, we tried to be just objective and educational and kind of keep a lot of personal opinion out of it, because that was the nature of the book that we were asked to write by the publisher, by Visible Ink Press. However, personally, and I know Larry feels the same way I do, which is why we, you know, we get along so well, when you do the research and you go back in time and you examine where these concepts originated from, you see that they did not start out the way that they ended up now. They started out as a way for primitive humans to categorize their environment. You know, this is good, this is beneficial, this is bad, this is negative, and then eventually applying deities to the good side and the bad side, and then narrowing those deities down to two, God and Satan. So when people say things like, well, Satan is real and he's governing all of the things that are going on in the world today, I have a hard time with that. Again, because I know where all of these concepts originated from. But what I do agree with is that there is a darker adversarial element within each of us. I think, you know, this may sound a little metaphysical, but I think that we're all walking gods and Satan. You know, we have the capability of violence and destruction just as we do love and creation.
Right, right. The concept of Satan, or even, you know, a devil or one that is in opposition to God, does that exist in most of the major religions, or is it mainly sort of a Judeo-Christian phenomenon?
You know, every religious tradition has some symbolic, deities or deity that sort of is split between good and evil, you know, that duality between good and evil. But because Judeo-Christianity and actually all three of the Western traditions, including Islam, they're the most prevalent for us here, you know, in the Western Hemisphere, that we tend to kind of, you know, be more influenced by those ideas. So Satan, now, first of all, if you go back and you study where the concept of the devil started, you'll see that the idea of Satan came a little bit later. Then there was this idea of Lucifer. Are these three different entities? Are they all the same? Are they? Then there's a serpent, there's a dragon, there's a snake. There's so many different symbols for this, king of darkness, if you will, that even if you just use the Bible, the Old Testament, as your research tool, you would be so confused. And then when you look at other traditions, you know, Hinduism has satanic deities. Even Buddhism. Buddhism has Mara, who is a destructive, almost demonic being, but very, very, you know, highly symbolic in nature. Buddhists did not believe that Mara was an actual deity, but rather a symbol of the temptation of the Buddha when he was under the Bodhi tree. You know, the same thing with Jesus being tempted by the devil. That whole idea that, you know, you have these people that want to retain their goodness and purity. They're tempted by their own darker side, their own shadow self. And so that kind of manifested into these external tempters, these adversaries, you know, the ones that questioned the power and the goodness of Jesus or Buddha or, you know, any other religious figure.
When you mentioned Lucifer, which conjures up, you know, the stories of the fallen angels, you know, commingling with the daughters of men and creating these hybrids, the Nephilim. Many scholars believe these are the giants that we hear about in the Old Testament. But I've always been sort of a little confused as to the difference between fallen angels and demons. Can you help clarify that for me?
Well, demons were considered the minions of the head honcho, whether you're talking about the devil, D-E-V-I-L, or Satan. Demons are considered lesser evil entities. That there were many different hierarchies of, you know, which demons were more powerful than the others, and some of them were like the drones, you know, the worker bees. Fallen angels are a completely different concept. The fallen angels are basically considered deities, godlike beings that fell from grace because they wanted to mate with human women, and their offspring became the giants that we know of as the Nephilim. So they were angels that, you know, you could almost say that they weren't happy being in heaven, or they questioned, in the case of Lucifer, question God's authority, God's power. Lucifer was said to have been a favorite angel, a beautiful, beautiful angel that maybe was a little vain, a little, you know, troublemaker, and who questioned the authority of God and was booted out of heaven because of it. Kind of in the same way that Adam and Eve were booted out of, you know, the garden for eating the forbidden fruit. What's interesting about Lucifer, though, I think one of the most fascinating things that I really didn't know that much about, because this whole book really was a realm of research that I hadn't done a whole lot of before, was the potential association between Lucifer and Venus, the morning star.
Right.
And how Lucifer is even referred to as the light bringer, the morning star. And also the potential association with a Babylonian king who, you know, and it's funny because when you read this and you learn these things, you start to realize, well, the Lucifer that everybody believes in and talks about now is probably built upon a foundation of misinterpretation. Because a lot of people just have no clue where the Lucifer that they either claim to worship or condemn even came from. So the fallen angels are fascinating, though, and I don't necessarily think they qualified as demons, but we included them in the book because they do take on a sort of darker aspect simply because they went against the decision of God, you know, and they came down and they mated with lowly human women. So that sort of desire for sexual intercourse with humans is what caused their fall from grace.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, one strange thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real and just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again, and Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. We give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. We cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists, so go check out the Every Town podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinky County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Let's talk about some of the demons, and they go by different names, and some of these, I think, sort of cut across religious traditions. My boys right now are doing a novel study, and they're doing Lord of the Flies, which is that's Beelzebub. Where does Beelzebub come from, and where does that name Lord of the Flies come from?
Lord of the Flies. Oh my God. I read that back in high school. Well, Beelzebub is one of the many popular names for the devil. Not necessarily Satan, but the devil, along with Azeroth, and oh gosh, there's a million of them. Larry actually did a really amazing list. I think it's in the appendix of the book.
Yes.
On all of the different names of the devil. Honest to God, I don't remember Lord of the Flies.
But
I remember the plot.
Right.
Remember the boys were reverting to sort of really violent behavior. For me, the association with Beelzebub comes from that darn movie with, what's his name, Michael Keaton?
Oh, that's right. Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice, yeah.
That's right.
That's another name, yeah. But yeah, I mean, there's so many different names depending on a regional country, religion, tradition, whatever cultural belief or tradition. The Middle Eastern jinn, they have their own names. The Persians and Islam has their names for their demons. But I think that they may all be the same entities. It's just, we give them different names depending on where we live or where we've, where we grow up. And
sure. The Canaanite god, Baal, I guess, which meant Lord. I mean, is Baal synonymous with Satan, do you think?
I think it's just another association, another name, again, based on cultural or regional differences. I'm going to actually try to find this list, because one of the things that we found when we were going over the list was just the repetition. You know, you'd have five or six different names for the demon that was supposed to be right under Satan, right? In the hierarchy in hell. And then you'd have maybe 10 different names of the lowest level demons. And I really think it depends on whether it's from Babylonian demonology or Christian demonology. Is it, you know, Hungarian? There's Roman demonology. We found so many different names of entities that all seem to be the same when you sort of did a little bit of comparison. Oh my gosh, Hindu demonology. So, yeah, I think the concept was widespread. The Eastern traditions, Buddhism, Confucianism, they tend to avoid the God-demon breakdown because it's simply not a part of their belief system. But even so, they recognize symbols of good and evil, just in a little bit of a different form.
Right. And it seems that throughout history, you know, one group's pantheon of gods is, you know, another group's pantheon of demons.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's like Astaroth, you know, the great Duke of Hell. We got a really big kick out of some of the titles that, you know, it's almost like a castle full of royalty, the Earl and Dukes of Hell. And but you'll find, you know, like Baal is supposed to be one of the big guys, the head demons. Well, it says here that such and such is a head demon, and then over here so I think it really is just regional, depending on what religion, what part of the world believed in that particular demon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I kind of tend to think that they're talking about the same thing.
Right.
So people don't think, oh my God, there's millions of demons out there. Well, that could be true. But I tend to think it's more like we call a dog a dog, but, you know, in a different language, they call it, what is it, perro in Spanish? And we may give different names to different things that somebody in Taiwan will have a complete different name for, but we're all talking about the same thing.
Right, right. Do you include in, I guess, the it's kind of like the Audubon Guide to Demons here, but the Audubon Field Guide of Demonology.
Yeah,
but would incubus and succubus and things like the old hag be part of that?
You know, we included them. We included cryptids. We included shadow people, hat people, Mothman, the old hag, Krampus, succubi, incubi. We included anything and everything that we have seen people associate with evil. Because some people will say, well, they're demonic. You know, they're either their behavior is demonic or they're outright demonic entities. Now, they may not necessarily be legitimate demons when you go back and look at that list in the back of the book, but they take on a sort of demonic quality, just like the haunted dolls that we talk about. And, you know, what's the doll's name? Annabelle. Haunted toys. Are these, you know, are they possessed by demons? Are they just evil? So, yeah, we included everything. And I really think that's what we humans do. We label things either good, and then we put them all in the good category. And then we label things demonic and bad, and we put those all in the bad category.
Right.
Even though they might not be. You know, if you look at something like Mothman, was Mothman a demonic entity? I know that, you know, that there are people that say that it was frightening and caused death, but I don't necessarily know that it was demonic so much that it might have been something completely from another reality or another dimension.
Right. Any more than Bigfoot or chupacabras.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Chupacabras. Right. Even aliens. I mean, we did include a little bit about aliens because we, you know, we hear about alien abductions and we automatically attach a sort of negative, evil quality to aliens, when maybe they're just doing the same thing that we do when we go out into the wild and we tag and trap animals so that we could study animal behavior. You know, are we doing it because we're evil, or are we doing it because we want to learn about the animal behavior? And they could be doing the very same thing with humans, but because it hurts us and it's fearful and it represents the unknown, we tag it as demonic and evil and bad.
Well, I don't happen to be someone who agrees that these alien abductions are in our best interest, but my good friends at Life Extension, they do have our best interest in mind. Our bodies deserve the best, but how do you choose the very best nutritional supplements or even know what's in them? Well, Life Extension has been helping people stay healthy for over 35 years. Just like with the foods you eat, the quality, purity, and potency of the ingredients in your nutritional supplements really do matter. Life Extension supplements set the gold standard for supporting weight loss, heart, brain, bone, joint, eye, skin, sexual health, and so much more. Their formulas are based in the latest scientific research and clinically validated dosages. That's one reason why 98% of their customers recommend Life Extension to their friends and family. Every Life Extension product is backed by a total satisfaction guarantee. The bottom line? Life Extension is the brand you can trust with your health. Check out Life Extension products with special savings. Visit smartclickidea.com. That's smartclickidea.com. smartclickidea.com.
Theoretical physicists say that there's as many as 12 hyperdimensions. Here are just three of them. Conspiracy Unlimited. Conspiracy Unlimited. Conspiracy Unlimited. Pretty cool, huh? Here's an extra one. Conspiracy Unlimited. Hey, how about one more? Conspiracy Unlimited. And the great thing is we have 6 hyperdimensions left. Conspiracy Unlimited. 5.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I am a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s?
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it, and we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Marie Jones is here. She's the co-author of Demons, the Devil, and Fallen Angels. I wanted to ask you about a possible connection between the fallen angels and the alien abduction phenomenon.
You know, assuming that there's some sort of hybrid program going on, and many ufologists believe that there might be. Matthew, I think it's chapter 24, as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be again. What do you think of that, the connection between the alien abduction phenomenon and fallen angels?
I think that it would be really, really easy to take angels, demons, aliens, entities, and they're all interchangeable. Were the people that wrote the texts that were used in the Old and New Testament, and you know, were our ancestors seeing angels, or were they seeing aliens coming down from the sky? And because they didn't have any scientific understanding of the fact that there could be other civilizations traveling here from, you know, far out in the universe or possibly another universe, they gave it a religious connotation, right? But could they have been seeing aliens? And could those aliens have been breeding with human women? And could the Nephilim have been hybrids? Human-alien hybrids. And I know that, you know, the ancient alien theory speaks of a lot of alien intervention and interference, possibly, throughout human history. So we don't have any way of really knowing if they're talking about honest-to-God angels that sat at the right hand of the Father up in heaven and then, you know, some of them fell from grace, or aliens that they just didn't really quite know how to wrap their minds around. Are the aliens today angel? You know, I mean, right. I just really feel like you've got all this imagery of things that look like UFOs and you know, men were people wearing spacesuits and things that look like they're alien, intermixed with stories of angels and, you know, whether it's ancient Greek or Roman mythology or what have you, religion, myth, are they talking about angels and demons, or are they talking about aliens?
That is the $64 million question.
Yeah.
I recently, I've talked to him before, but recently on Coast to Coast, I interviewed Dr. Richard Gallagher, who is a state-certified psychiatrist in New York. And, maybe 10 years ago, he wrote a piece for it was a Catholic publication called The New Observer, titled An Authentic Case of Demonic Possession. And he was asked to consult with a group of priests, and they brought this woman whom he calls Julia to his office. And after sort of putting her through a battery of psychological tests and so forth, he came to the conclusion that this was an authentic case of demonic possession. What do you make of that?
Well, okay. So again, I'm kind of split down the middle here. So we wrote a lot about exorcisms and demonic possession. And there are a lot of really compelling cases. But because because I'm the daughter of a physicist and have a little bit of a skeptical bent, I also know that people manifest symptoms and behaviors that can look like demonic possession on their own. I've actually seen it happen in a physical therapy unit where there were children who had some mental issues, and not to breach anybody's privacy, but it looked like they were possessed. Now, I'm not gonna say that this doesn't exist, but are these priests and are these demonologists viewing what they're dealing with through a distorted lens based upon their own beliefs? Because we don't hear a lot about demonic possession outside of countries that are not primarily Christian.
Hmm.
And even if you go to places like Africa, or even, you know, within Voodoo and Santeria, now they'll tell you that they're being possessed by the spirits, but they're not necessarily demonically possessed. It's a little bit of a different concept. But those religions here in America have been heavily influenced by Catholicism. I don't know that I've, and you can correct me if I'm wrong or anyone can, but I don't know if I've ever heard of a case of an atheist or a non-religious person claiming to, you know, be demonically possessed. I could be wrong.
I don't know.
But I wonder if our faith and belief takes on a power of its own through which we then view the lens of whatever it is. You know, some of these people could have had severe mental illness. Some of them could have been schizophrenic. They could have been, who knows?
Well, in Gallagher's case, I mean, he was trained, obviously, to determine whether, if there was any underlying mental illness. And in this case, he ruled all of those things out. And
I'm curious what made him think that it was, though, because, you know, are there any people who are not priests or, you know, trained in the Catholic Church or whatever church that do exorcisms or can deal with demonic possessions? It always seems to have that the association with Roman Catholicism, Christianity. Mm-hmm. I need to question that.
Right. Sure.
Now, I'm not saying because, you know, somebody could come and show me somebody floating. But and it also sounds similar to poltergeist activity. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that poltergeist activity is actually a lot more natural than it appears to be. It appears to be very frightening, but it does involve brain activity. And I don't know if, and I think maybe this will be in book two, if I have ever heard of a case of demonic possession where the people involved were not associated with a particular religion that believed in that.
Right, right. It's an excellent point. I want to just shift gears a little bit and talk about the Church of Satan and rather interesting character to say the least, Anton LaVey. I guess he passed on about 20 years ago. And what do you make? I mean, who was this guy really? And what do you make? Was he just putting everyone on, or did he really believe in this? And what did he believe, in fact?
Well, I got to sort of qualify this, because this is really interesting. When I wrote my very first book, Science, which kind of looked at the quantum physics and human consciousness and the paranormal, and I did a whole lot of radio, I was getting a lot of emails from members of the Church of Satan congratulating me on the book, because I presented a scientific viewpoint of what other people think of as God. And I thought that was the oddest thing, and it really scared the crap out of me. And I think I actually made sort of a snarky comment about the Church of Satan, which I knew nothing about, I will admit. And I had a couple of people email me and say, you know, we're from the Church of Satan, and we want to let you know what we do and what we believe in. And they laid it all out for me, and they sent me to their website, and they weren't trying to convert me. And I said, oh, I'm really embarrassed. These people are not what the media has portrayed them to be. Now, Anton LaVey was a showman. I mean, he started out really interestingly as a musician, which so did Manson and David Koresh. Now, I don't know, you know, if that's just a weird coincidence, but he was, you know, just real charismatic, and everybody loved him, and he thought of himself as, you know, an occultist and just this really grandiose character. So obviously he was narcissistic and had a huge ego, and he hung out with celebrities. And I think really what the Church of Satan and all of the other churches that sort of sprung around that or around the same time, they're hedonists. They were not child sacrificers. They didn't, you know, kill people and rape children or anything. They enjoyed being human. Let's put it that way. Now, part of being human is your sexuality. So there's a lot of embracing of human sexuality in the Church of Satan. Whereas if you look at Christianity, sexuality is evil. It's shunned. You know, it's degraded. It's looked down upon. So, yeah, but he was a character. I think his whole point was to question authority, the whole adversary, you know, Satan being the adversary that questioned the power of God. And I think that a lot of people were attracted to that, especially during the 70s and, you know, the sort of after Vietnam War, people really were more about questioning the establishment. And it kind of went back to the church, the power of the church during the Inquisition and the witch burnings. And now here we are again. And now we can really question the establishment and stand up against the man and have our own thing. And that was the Church of Satan for a lot of people. But, you know, they had a lot of really famous members. And
sure.
Jane Mansfield, yes. You know.
Sammy Davis Jr.
And the more that I learned, and this was years ago, again, when I was kind of told, you know, don't insult us if you don't know what we're about, I realized that there was not a whole lot to be afraid of. However, having said that, you know, we went through the whole satanic panic in the 90s and this the idea of ritual satanic abuse of children and whatnot. Just because the Church of Satan and some of these other organizations were not doing evil things doesn't mean that there were extremist groups that, you know, that weren't. There were extremist satanic groups, just as there are extremist Christian, you know, the white supremacist identity movement, and just as there are extremist Muslims. So Satanism, modern day Satanism, got a really bad rap because of those extremists. They were committing crimes. They were killing cats. There was a big deal with killing cats and leaving them out and, you know, putting the symbol of Satan scaring the crap out of people. And I actually remember seeing that on the news when I was young. So I think it's just another, you know, another example of something being totally misinterpreted, and the media and the public focusing on the super negative aspect of it, which was the extremist element of it.
Well,
I mean, the Church of Satan became a legitimate religion, mm-hmm. and even the army, you know, they included
right.
it in their chaplain manual, so it couldn't have been that bad.
Although, I don't know, LaVey may not have done himself any favors when he played Satan himself in Rosemary's Baby in the rape scene. I guess it was uncredited.
I think he was like Aleister Crowley. He was a showman. He was, you know, he wanted attention. He was an extreme, you know, behavior, almost like a clown. But I don't think that made him evil. But I think that he wanted people to think he was. And I think, you know, with the Church of Satan, they really kind of were self-gratifying. That's, you know, something that they stood for, self-gratification, gratifying the ego, whereas, you know, we were told in other traditional religions that we need to shun the ego. That the self should not be satisfied, that you must serve and do everything for others.
Right. One of the Manson family, I think was it Susan Atkins? She was involved in the Tate LoBianco murders, and she was involved with LaVey, wasn't she? Wasn't she either in the church or in one of his productions?
I think so,
yeah.
I'm trying to remember, but you know, yeah. This is where the line becomes very blurred. Are these true religions, or are they cults? You know, where does the line between a church that's led by someone who is that extravagant and sort of flamboyant and boisterous? Does it turn into a cult? But the things that we found with satanic cults was that they tended to be, again, more extremist. They were not about, you know, filing nonprofit paperwork and trying to do things legally. They were more just about, we can do whatever we want, following some leader blindly. You know, a lot of people said that Charles Manson was a Satanist. I think he was just nuts. I don't think he was lucid enough to really even understand, these concepts.
Right, right.
But look at somebody like David Koresh. Now, David Koresh was on the other extreme because he believed that he was chosen by God to lead the branch of Davidians. Mm-hmm. And so here you have sort of the flip side of Anton LaVey or of a Charles Manson.
Interesting about LaVey, the irony is that he ends up dying in a Catholic hospital.
Yeah, well, there you go. And they took care of him, didn't they?
They did indeed. They did indeed. Yeah. Demons, the devil, and fallen angels. Marie, thank you so much for this. Always a pleasure.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. It was nice to talk to you again.
And how can people get a hold of this book, Demons, the Devil, and Fallen Angels?
It is in bookstores, online, offline, brick and mortar, and I know that it's in libraries, too. So, should be easy to find.
Excellent. All right. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I want to let you in on my plans for the next episode of Conspiracy Unlimited. Before that, just a reminder, if you want to get in on our weekly draw for a chance to win a copy of my Strange Planet CD, it's real simple and kind of fun. All you need to do is rate and review this podcast, then grab a screenshot of that and email it to me at richardserrett1@gmail.com. Don't forget to include your name and mailing address. Your name goes into the draw, and then be listening to this podcast on Friday, and you could hear your name called. I'll drop your CD in the post right after the show. Good luck. Say, are you struggling with your weight loss program? Been there. I know how you feel. Unfortunately, the commitment to weight loss often fades. Many people simply give up in the first 90 days. The key is having the right mindset. Getting thin and staying that way lies in our thought processes, and hypnotherapy can actually make a great difference. Now, clinical hypnotherapist Dr. Steve G. Jones has created a set of 5 audio hypnotic sessions that apply the power of hypnosis to reprogram the mind and replace bad habits with vibrant, positive new habits and help you achieve natural and long-lasting weight loss. Weight loss hypnotherapy really works, and it's available now at a special discount. Isn't it time to lose those extra pounds? Check out weight loss hypnotherapy right now at smartclicksavings.com. That's smartclicksavings.com. Coming up on the next episode of Conspiracy Unlimited, an attorney, science teacher, author, and father of a daughter with autism discusses the connections between autism and vaccinations. Until next time, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.